Welcome to the Business Bookshelf, where I interview business authors and talk about their newly released books. Today I interview Tamsin Webster about her book called Find Your Red Thread, Make Your Big Ideas Irresistible. Tamsin has spent the last 20 years helping experts drive action from their ideas. Part message strategist, part storyteller, part English-to-English translator, her work focuses on how to find and build the stories partners, investors, clients, and customers will tell themselves and others. She's the author of Find Your Red Thread, Make Your Big Ideas Irresistible. You have a terrific idea. It's so powerful that it could change a life, a market, or even the entire world. There's just one problem. Others don't see its power yet. If you truly value the possibility of your ideas, then you're ready to find your red thread, the through line that connects your idea to your audience's hearts and minds. The best part is, the red thread already exists. It's the connection that makes the invisible link between your audience's problem and your solution tangible and actionable. With the red thread, you'll inspire audiences to act and get the outcome you're both looking for. So here we go. Prepare to find your red thread. Enjoy the interview.
Oh, I'm delighted. Thanks for having me, Lance.
It's fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me and my listeners. And Tamsin, where am I speaking to you from today? Where do I find you?
You, even though there's a picture of New York behind me, Flatiron, I'm actually coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts on the East Coast of the US.
I love that part of the world, like New England. We went there in fall and then went to Martha's Vineyard and obviously explored Boston. Why do you live there? Have you always lived in Boston? And what do you do? What do you love about Boston?
I have lived here for 30 years now. And I originally came up for college. I briefly left for grad school, but hightailed it right back here. I didn't grow up here. I grew up as a Navy kid. So I grew up in all sorts of different places, mostly in southeastern Virginia, also on the East Coast. I love Boston because it is, in many ways, I think one of the most European of American cities. And one of the things I particularly love about it is that it has a sense of, as a friend of mine once put it, continuous human occupation. I mean, Boston is a place where, you know, this isn't old for some of the for some of your listeners and some of the countries that they're listening to, but you know, where there are still houses standing from the 1700s and the 1800s, and Boston keeps those buildings around, and you're just constantly surrounded by this wonderful mix of students and people in the tech industry and artists and academics. It's just it's a wonderful place, and I love seasons, so I like living there too.
Yeah, it's the home. It's the birth of so many things in America, and obviously the Boston Tea Party, where the independence from England started, and all these type of things happen in Boston, which is amazing. Are you a fan of the Boston Red Sox?
Absolutely. You can't live here and not be. Yes,
absolutely.
So definitely a baseball fan. More of a baseball fan than a football fan, but yeah, I love it.
Nice, super. So Tamsin, can we start by can you give the listeners an overview of your career and how you formed Find Your Red Thread? And then maybe we'll speak about Find Your Red Thread at the end of the interview, but maybe you can give us an overview of your career leading up to that.
Sure. I heard it once said that the past, looking back, the past is a straight line. I am in no way where I thought I'd be. And yet if I look back, everything makes sense about how I ended up. When I was growing up, I actually wanted to be a museum director. I was really like, doesn't everyone, police officer, lawyer, doctor, museum director. And so I went to school wanting, so there, that was that element. And also there's an element of when I went to college, it was in the early 1990s. And at that time we were in a bit of a recession and a dip here in the US, and employability was really high on my list. So I decided to go to the most creative form of business that I could, which was marketing. And so studied that, found that I was bored, added an undergraduate degree in something that's known as American Studies, which is essentially a cross-cultural study, you know, of America and American culture. Because I thought that would make sense. If I was going to market to Americans, I should understand the culture from different perspectives. And from there, I actually went straight to grad school. So I left all of grad school still thinking that, you know, I was going to, you know, I was going to be a museum director and all of that. Didn't. I mean, I did work a little bit in museums but mostly I ended up doing marketing. I started first in a museum doing, well, I should say, I briefly was a change management consultant coming out of business school, graduate business school.
Yeah.
But then it and Dallas, where I was, didn't agree with me. And I decided like, well, let's go back to the museum thing. ended up doing museum exhibition planning for a wonderful little museum on the North Shore of Massachusetts here. Then moved from there to become the head of marketing for the Boston Conservatory, which is a performing arts college. Did that for 4.5 years. Then wow. Moved to a different kind of deep passion place, place of people with deep passions. And that was Harvard Medical School, where I was the head of fundraising communication strategy for another 3 years. And then I decided that I wanted to get a broader perspective on what I was increasingly finding that I just really loved, which was this one aspect of marketing and brand strategy that I adored, which was really the core of the message, the core of the brand. What was it about an institution, an organization, an idea, in the case of all the research happening at Harvard Medical School? How is it, like, what made that idea powerful and how could I get that out? So I wanted more of that. And so I moved to agencies for about the next 7 to 10 years, did some work at an advertising agency in charge of social digital content strategy. Actually right before that, I was at a brand strategy agency and then did boutique sales messaging. And then about 5 years ago now, just past my five-year anniversary, I started my own business, really focused exclusively on message strategy, particularly for experts. So people of deep passions and deep knowledge who wanted to get other people who didn't have that same knowledge to understand and act on their ideas.
Mm. Thank you so much, Tamsin. That's fantastic. And not to move across to your book, and it was a fantastic book. It's called Find Your Red Thread, Make Your Big Ideas Irresistible, which, you know, every company and organization needs, and even I need in my day-to-day job, and I need to make my ideas and hopefully big ideas irresistible. And Tamsin, can you tell us, you know, the reason for writing it? Because writing a book is a big undertaking, and a brief overview of it.
Sure. There's really two reasons to write it. One was I had been doing this work for a while and people said, when are you going to write this book? When are you going to capture this? So, because there's only one of you, Tamsin. So how can we get more access to what this is? But that's the tactical reason. I mean, the real reason I wrote it was because throughout all of those different areas that I worked, you know, and with the different kinds of people that I worked with, you know, artists, musicians, scientists, technologists, over and over again, I saw these people with these amazing ideas that really struggled to articulate them, that really struggled, you know, these beautiful ideas would stay contained in these small arenas because only other people who understood the idea at the same level as the original creator of that idea, like those are the people who could understand it, and they would just get trapped there. And I saw this really specifically when I was when I became the executive producer of TEDx Cambridge, which is the oldest locally organized TED Talk event in the world. And that was, you know, the very purpose of TED Talks is to get these big ideas out there. So that's where I developed the process for the book. So the book is an outline of that process that I developed, you know, starting about 5 years ago, but built on, you know, the 20 plus years of kind of on the ground experience of doing this for and with companies and individuals. And it really is, what is a reliable process, just a process you can go back to over and over again for fully understanding your idea and explaining it so that other people can see the power and see it as I like to say, as irresistibly as you do.
Yes. And you use storytelling to communicate that big idea, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. Well, because one of the things that I found, you know, starting even back when I was in college, like I mentioned that I went and got a business degree. And then I also had this American Studies degree. And I did the same thing actually in grad school as well. I got an MBA and I also got a master's in arts administration.
Wow.
And so throughout my life, I've really been sitting in between audiences. And one of the primary roles of marketing really is to sit between the company and the customers and clients that it serves, to be a translator in both directions. So when it came to finding a reliable way to translate ideas, I was looking for what would serve as kind of a Rosetta Stone, where if we could get an idea into a particular format, would there be a way that anyone could understand it? Like, that was my hypothesis. That's what I went looking for. And it didn't take much work to find the very well-established point at this point in time that the humans make sense of the world through story. Mm. And not necessarily once upon a time, or as a dark and stormy night kind of story. Story in the sense of we're constantly looking to link cause and effect. And as one of my storytelling colleagues, Ron Plouffe, would call it, linking roles and events and influences. Who's doing what, why, and what happens as a result? And so I was like, well, if this is how we make sense of the world, and stories, actual once upon a time stories, have fairly recognized elements that are true across all stories, what would happen if I borrowed those elements from once upon a time stories and applied them to these kind of brain stories that we make to make sense of the world? So that's really what I went in exploring about whether or not that could work. And it turns out that it does, that if you can break down an idea into the elements of a story, then somebody else's brain will process it as a story. And therefore you essentially work with how everybody's brain processes information and other ideas. So it's essentially kind of uploading your idea into the story processors of other people's brains so that you essentially can shortcut their ability to understand it, both kind of on the face of what it is, but also the ability to understand the implications, the cause and effect of that idea.
Wow, thank you. And is it used for people who come up with these big ideas for pitches, or is it used to communicate to staff, or is it used in advertising? Where are you?
All of that.
All of that. So storytelling everywhere. That.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like I said, it's got its start with my work with TEDx. So I think in the beginning, a lot of people are like, oh, well, this is just a way to like give talks with it. But remember that the process, like I was pouring into this, 20 years of developing messages and materials and working with companies and on the agency side, pitching ideas to companies and trying to win business and working with companies in sales messaging to help them win business. So all of that went into this because I wanted something that solved the problem that I had through all of that, which was every time I had to face a blank page, it felt like I had to start all over again and kind of guess at what would be powerful. And so I really wanted to find something that would work anytime you needed to explain an idea. And so that can take any format. And so, in the 5 years since I came up with this, I've put it through really, really rigorous testing and application across all sorts of different things. So my company clients come to me because they're looking either for a number of things. Sometimes they're looking to improve their sales messaging. Sometimes they're looking to figure out like in a lot of ways, like brand positioning. One of my favorite applications of it is what I like to refer to as operationalizing a brand. So in a case where a company has already done the work of working with a brand strategy firm to come up with a great tagline, a lot of companies have found themselves in a position after they've done that of saying, okay, well, that's great. We got a tagline, but we can't like just post our tagline every day. We can't just, write a blog post about our tagline all the time. Like, how do we take the idea that's captured in that brand positioning and expand it and give it enough depth and breadth so that we can use it day to day, and that our marketing department can really adapt it to how they need it, and the sales team, but even HR can articulate it in a way that makes sense, and that the C-suite can say, all right, well, here's how I can imbue those ideas into how I talk to my staff. So from an individual standpoint, it's a lot of the same things of, you know, talk development, book concepts, those kinds of things. And yeah, as you mentioned, a lot of pitch development, go-to-market messaging, those kinds of things. Again, all anytime you need to explain an idea. Yeah.
So this is my third question. I'm going off script. So we'll see how it works. But
that's good.
I'm desperate, or you look very keen to learn about storytelling, and I try and incorporate it into things that I do. And I've interviewed quite a few people on this podcast who've written, you know, books about storytelling. So can I ask you impromptu? So if this doesn't work out, it's fine. But if I interviewed an author 2 days ago, who's a director of a company, who their big idea is to put a facility on the moon that will then have solar panels, which will be in direct contact with the sun, and will generate so much electricity that they'll be able to not only power the whole of the moon, but also send it back to Earth. So I'm the client, and I came to you and I said, look, I really got this. We've got initial investors, but I need, you know, another $10 million or whatever the story was. Do you have any outline or thinking that you go through when, if someone came to you with that kind of idea?
I follow the process I outline in the book. I mean, it really comes down to, you know, who are you talking to? What is it that you want to have happen? And what is the use case for this message? So let's say, for instance, that someone's looking for funding for that idea, or they're trying to get people on board. Okay, well, let's look at this message through the lens of, you know, if it's funding, okay, how does that conversation go? How does that pitch go? How are you presenting this idea in such a way that's going to make it powerful? And from there, it really says, okay, well, if you're talking to investors, they're going to care that people who eventually buy and benefit from this care about it. So let's talk about that. What question are those people, kind of this ultimate audience for this product? What question are those people asking right now? So what problem are they trying to solve? What goal are they trying to achieve? What need are they trying to meet? But what is something that they're actively asking right now that this idea, as big and as, you know, as seemingly just beyond comprehension as it might be, what question does it answer? So it really is about this idea of, you've got to start where people are. And so that you can bring them to a much bigger idea. Because if you can make the case that it actually does answer this question, well, then you've done the work.
Yeah.
But this is one of the hidden uses of this approach. And it's certainly one that I use when clients and both individual and company clients come to me. So you can use the same approach of the red thread as a diagnostic tool, as figuring out why isn't something working. And a lot of times that can be because, well, you actually haven't made a viable argument that connects that audience question to your ideas and answer. Like, you've come up with an answer, but it doesn't actually relate to anything. It's like, it does a thing, but if it's not doing a thing that you can realistically connect to what people care about right now, you're going to have a lot more trouble with it. So it's a good way to test ideas as well.
Yeah. And just maybe one more follow-up question before we get on to the red thread concept itself. This investor on 2 days ago said that when he was young, when he was 10 years old, he dreamt of being an astronaut. And so when he went into this investor pitch, essentially, and this young guy came in, long hair, and started to tell this crazy idea of putting a facility on the moon, that it resonated with him because he had that kind of background. And I get the feeling that it was by accident. Maybe it wasn't. But I suppose that's what you're saying. Now you've got to try and tie it into what your people are imagining. And do you think you've got to do research and obviously, and then tie it into their emotions as well, I presume, to try and get an emotional response rather than just an analytical response from them?
Well, Yes. I mean, I think what I found out, so full disclosure, undergraduate degree was in market research, and I'm married to a market researcher. So I believe very strongly in market research. Yeah. That said, my experience over and over again with companies and individuals both is that they have a much more solid understanding of their customers than oftentimes than they give themselves credit for. And the reason why I say that is because there's a lot of times where, you know, yes, there's the customers you have, but there's also the customers that you want. And so there's a lot that you can do around a messaging of an idea that allows you to really tune your idea exactly to the people that you're looking for. And a lot of that starts with framing it through a question that they're asking. Now, one of the kind of, you know, one of the rigorous things that I put my clients through, and I just remind myself that they hire me to do this for them, is that sometimes, you know, when they've settled on that question, you know, and it can be something like, oh, I've always wanted to be on the moon. That's when we have to test it against, you remember one of the things I said we're looking for is like, what do you want it to do for you? Because it might be that you may have absolutely beautifully articulated a question that your audience is asking, but your audience may be too small to actually realistically achieve the outcome that you're looking for if you frame it that way. And so that's one of the processes that I think is necessary for any idea, but it's certainly something I walk my clients through is that trade-off. Say, okay, what's more important to you here? That you're speaking specifically to people who had and shared the same dream with you? Or are you trying to make sure that you fund this so that those people and others get that benefit? If it's that second one, then we have to do some work to really go back and decide, okay, how do we broaden the appeal of this concept so that more people are likely to be interested and relevant to it? Mm. Now that piece of it right there, that relevance piece, is what I hope is kind of some of the hidden power of this red thread approach, which is that, you know, there's rightly people focus very much on how you want people to feel. The trick is, if you spend any time talking to psychologists or whatever, is that you can't make people feel anything. Feelings are the product of other things. They're the product usually of thoughts. And so that's one of the concepts that's really built into the red thread is that It is a structure of thoughts that creates feelings for people. And so if you, for instance, establish your idea for your company or whatever it is, write solidly, let's say in a question that somebody really wants an answer to right now, but can't find it. The minute that you anchor your message there, you can key quickly into a couple really powerful emotions and powerful motivations. One is that if you can say, hey, I know you have this question, this idea is an answer to that. Well, then you create a bit of hope, right? And you're like, oh, it's possible. Like immediately, you know, they may not think of this rationally, but their brain is going, oh, this open-ended thing that I had has a clue. Oh, that's, I can have hope now. You're also creating curiosity because they've been looking for this answer, but they haven't found it yet. And they want to know more. And how powerful is that when you are building a message? I mean, we all want people who of their own volition seek out more information of their idea. Well, there's no more powerful motivation to do that than curiosity. Mm. But you can also very easily anchor into people's frustrations and fears in the process of validating that they have that question. Like you can essentially say to them, you know, that's a really good question, because without the answer to that question, you've probably experiencing X or you're feeling Y, and that's frustrating. That creates these consequences. So yeah, it makes sense that you want to answer this question. That's part of potentially why we at this company or I individually wanted to answer it, because I felt that way too, or, you know, and so I wanted to do something about it. Mm. Let me walk you through where I went from there. Mm.
Super. And so we do get to the red thread itself. And I was speaking to you before we went live that the red thread is a concept that you've created. And obviously your company and your book is around the red thread. Yeah, and you've talked about it during this interview so far, but can you, in a nutshell, explain what the red thread concept is?
Sure. In the shortest explanation of it is the red thread is the name that I have borrowed from Swedish idiom to describe that story that we tell ourselves about how something in the world works. So we talked about that before, is that we are constantly building these stories to explain how the world works. And I discovered through the happy accident of some Swedish clients that the Swedes have a name for this. They call it the red thread. You know, what's the big idea? What's the thing that makes this make sense? And so, you know, back 5 years ago when I was working with these, first working with these TEDx speakers, I had already developed this storytelling, you know, the story-based process, right? So the story structure, this idea that if I could take an idea, break it down into its story, you know, into the structure of a story, we could explain, you know, understand the idea, strengthen it and explain it. But that was separate from this name of the red thread. And so what I did was I was like, huh, well, when I went and explored the likely origin story for why the red thread is called the red thread from the idiom standpoint, it actually ended up describing in many ways the process that I had developed for story structure.
Yeah.
And so very quickly, that story is, you know, the likeliest explanation people think is the is a mythological one, that it refers to the Ariadne's thread, the thread that Theseus used to find his way through the Minotaur's labyrinth.
Wow.
To find his way to the Minotaur, and then importantly, critically, back out again so that he could save his city of Athens. So this process of tracing and then retracing your steps to something important so that you could achieve some larger goal, that described this process of the red thread, because that's what it does. It helps you retrace the steps that allowed you to build this idea in your mind in the first place so that you can help other people take those same steps and achieve that same goal for themselves.
You're big into storytelling, and you use that mythical huge story to base to act as a guide or a framework for your story concept, which is amazingly cool.
I have this little pet peeve. I have to admit that I see, you know, there's lots of people who talk about storytelling, and I've seen a lot of people present on storytelling. And my biggest pet peeve is that people don't use the structure that they talk about to actually present what they're talking about. It definitely created some very, tense meta moments in writing my book, but it's very important to me that whenever I'm presenting on this topic, or really presenting on any topic, and particularly when I was writing the book, that I'm actually using the structure of what I'm talking about the whole time, because like, I can't tell you that, hey, the best way for you to articulate this idea is to do this thing, but I'm not going to use my own process to show it to you. It was important to me. It just, in that case, it was originally a happy accident, but it started that pattern of making sure that everything worked together, that there was consistency across what I was talking about, that if I was going to talk about story structure, then it should have, there should be a story behind it. And I should use story structure. And anytime I was formally talking about the idea itself.
And so just to remind the listeners, we're speaking to Tamsin Webster, or I am at least, you're listening to me talking to her, about her book, Find Your Red Thread, Make Your Big Ideas Irresistible. Now, Tamsin, I asked you about my crazy moon story or moon idea, but could you share with us a company or a product? You don't have to tell us the name of the product or the brand or anything that came to you and you helped them to come up with the communications for their big idea, and if it, you know, the success of it during your engagement. Do you have a story that you can share us about how you engaged with a company or a product?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I do a lot of work with a startup accelerator that's based out of Hawaii and the Bay Area, out of Oahu and the Bay Area. And one of the companies that they work with, one of their cohort companies, is a company called Solstice. And they are a community solar company. As part of this accelerator, I am the deliverer of their message strategy curricula, So I work with all their cohort companies to develop their go-to-market messaging. And Solstice, fairly well established already, but what was interesting was that they had a particular need, and that was how to explain the concept of community solar to potential people who would sign up for it. But here was the kicker. It had to be explained by somebody who was not already familiar with community solar. So let me stop and explain what community solar is.
Okay.
So community solar is, think of it like, and this is an analogy we came up with, think of it like carpooling, but with solar power.
Wow.
It is where a community, members of a community can sign up with Solstice for solar power, where they all benefit from it. So essentially they're getting the use of solar panels and the energy that those are produced, but there nobody has to invest individually in having those solar panels put on their house or whatever. So it's essentially like carpooling with solar, where community members can sign up to, you know, members of a neighborhood or whatever can sign up together and then all get the benefits of lower utility bills and also, you know, more environmentally friendly sources of power.
Yeah.
Now it's very complicated how that actually works, like how the energy storage works and how, like, where the fields are and whatever. But part of what is necessary to get community solar to work is to get multiple members of a community to sign up for it. And oftentimes in a lot of the communities that we're going into, people were kind of suspicious about, like, what is this thing? I can't see it. It's not whatever. And anytime that someone's going to come in and be like, hey, we can save you money on utility bills, they're going to be like, yeah, right. So we had to figure out a way to, for somebody who was essentially neighbor to neighbor explanation of this pretty complicated concept. Mm-hmm. So we did what I talked about before, is that we started with what is a question that, you know, those the neighbors that they wanted to talk to, kind of the people they wanted to sign up, what was a question they were asking right now that Solstice and community solar could be an answer for? And where we ended up was this idea of saving money on utility bills. That was a question that most people were actively asking. They weren't actively asking about how can I benefit from solar power, because it wasn't even in their, they wouldn't even remotely consider it an option. We're talking about oftentimes urban environments with a lot of renters. These are not people who could just put solar panels on their house. So they weren't even thinking about it. So we started with this question, how can I save money on my utility bills? And that establishes kind of this first element of the story, which is what I refer to in the book as the goal questions, the audience's goal, the question they're currently asking. Now, in every great story, there's something that gets in the way. And I refer to this in messaging as a problem of perspective. It is the thing that has to transform before someone will do something different. They have to shift their perspective somehow. So that's the thing that we look for next. We said, okay, when people are trying to save money on their utility bills, particularly electricity, what's the current perspective? How do most people go about doing that right now? Well, most people think about it and, you know, through the lens of, well, let me just use less electricity. And what community solar and Solstice represented was a second perspective, which was actually to pay less for what you use, which is a current option. And so we built a essentially a one sheeter that people could use, but we talked about, like, once we could get that perspective, that second perspective out there, just not just to use less, but to pay less for what you use. Now we open the door to be able to talk about what those options were. So in certain cases, that's, switch your provider for fossil fuels. That could be to install solar, but that's got the problem of you need to own your home. It's got that an investment, but it's also an ability to introduce this idea of community solar. And a really important concept, which is kind of the third element of the storytelling, something that creates what's known in stories as a moment of truth, something that people agree is true. And because they agree it's true, it really forces a decision about whether they actually want what they want. Do they really want to reduce their utility bills, or are they going to hold fast to their previous perspective? So in the case of solar power, we said we kind of borrowed something that most people would believe is true outside of solar power, which is that there's power in numbers. And of course, we love the wordplay of that. And we use the carpooling example as that. When a group of people work together on something, you can get, we didn't use this term, but you can get economies of scale, right? You can get the same thing for less money if more people are doing it. And so we introduced that concept, married it to community solar, and said, well, so that's why the best way to save money in utility bills is to essentially carpool with your neighbors to go with community solar, because that allows you to get all the benefits and be able to get the, you know, and also so it not only save money on utility bills, but also help the planet as well. So sure. That ended up being so effective in their community to community messaging. They actually, you know, community member to community member messaging, they started to adapt it for their sales messaging to, you know, larger organizations and all of that. So it turned out to be a quite a successful just interpretation of an otherwise very complicated process.
Sure. That's fantastic. And I've just been to the website, so stolstice.us, and it's really interesting. And there's two things that are interesting to me about that story. One is in South Africa, we have load shedding and power outages the whole time. So just like something like that would be absolutely fantastic in South Africa. And the second one, which is extremely frivolous, is that my crazy story and your story both were related to solar.
Solar power. Yeah, maybe that's why that might have been why what got into my head. But yeah, Solstice has been they're an example I use in the book, but you know they've been that it was just a it ends up being really great example of, I think, of the power both internally to a company, because once you've figured out one version of the red thread of your idea, oftentimes you have found enough information about it to very easily adapt it to other applications, but in ways that don't mean that you're just repeating it word for word. It's just, it gives you a very flexible way of talking about the same idea to different audiences at different stages of the decision-making process in a way that I have found over time to be nearly infinite. Once you just understand the components of your idea and how they come together.
So Tamsin, to end this interview, and it's been fantastic. TamsinWebster.com. Is that the website where you operate from?
Yes. All things Tamsin. Yes.
All things Tamsin. Could you tell us a little bit about that? What would people find if they went to TamsinWebster.com? And I'll have the link in the show notes.
Sure. I mean, I think they're going to find, like I said, I think hopefully the answers to most of their questions. So there's, you know, a quick overview of the red thread and what it is, but and a bit of an overview about me. They're going to find an overview of how I most frequently work with organizations. If you want me to come speak to your organization, what that can look and sound like, whether that's virtual or in person. And it's also the place where I publish the content of my newsletters. And where you can find my book as well. So it's a place where you can, like I said, all things Tamsin, all things related to messaging. And at this point now, yeah, there's quite a deep back catalog, I should say, of information. So if you're interested in the topic, there's a lot to explore.
Yeah, you can click on content, YouTube. Do you have a podcast as well, Tamsin?
It is gone. Yeah, my husband and I have done one season of something we call the Freenoter, which is not directly related to messaging per se, but it is related to one of the forms that your messaging can take, and that is to use speaking as a form of marketing and business development. My husband and I have both spent most of our careers in that kind of speaking. I'm a paid keynoter as well, but still have a, you know, it's very special space in my heart for that. But yeah, stay tuned. We're still working on more ideas.
That's fantastic. And then so you can sign up to your newsletter, which has got lots and lots of, just like you said, a bunch of stuff around change, tools, branding, storyteller, presenting. And then at the moment, I see you in a series on recommended reading. So if you don't find your books on the business bookshelf, you can find it on your website.
Yeah, so I was doing that this summer. I don't think anybody wants to read a deep, long newsletter in the summer. So I was doing what I was calling my minimum viable newsletter in the last few, because I also moved apartments this summer and all sorts of other things. So So what I was doing was highlighting three articles from my regular swath of sharing. So I share something that I every week where I'm in town and on the clock, I share usually about 10 articles a week that I hashtag swipe file, borrowing from kind of old copy editors, which would used to just grab kind of good examples of copy or, you know, letters or ads or, you know, things, and they would keep them in a file to refer to for more inspiration. So I adopted that idea, but in the case of stories, studies, stuff you can use, as I like to say. So I share those every week. And then the newsletter for the last few weeks, I've just been highlighting three of those that I thought were particularly interesting, useful, funny, you know. Well, this last one included one, the one that came out today included one on the cases of fish hitting airplanes.
And when an eel climbs a ramp to eat a squid from a clamp.
That's amore. I know. It's like, that is the most beautifully titled article, I think, of all time. But it, both of those are great examples of, you know, once you understand your core message, a lot of times when it comes to presenting those messages, since, you know, I've been a speaker professionally now for 18 plus years, a lot of people run into the like, well, okay, I know what the message is, but how do I make it interesting? Yeah. And so, you know, I started a process probably 7 or 8 years ago of just, I wanted to find more interesting analogies and metaphors and examples. And I found that I couldn't use everything that I found. So I just started to share them publicly as my swipe file. But I think even the fish hitting airplanes is a great example. It's like, it's a bizarre story, yeah, obviously. But I mean, just imagine how you could potentially use that. So let's say you need to illustrate a point about, you know, unlikely events happening anyway, right? And you're kind of tired of the black swan metaphor. Yes. Well, now you can tell people about fish hitting airplanes, and because it's a,
well,
you know,
that, if a fish did hit your airplane, it would mean that you've landed in the Hudson or something.
No, actually, what happens is the birds drop fish. Like, so that's the thing. So it's what happens is like a bird will like drop a fish and like it misses the bird, but the fish gets into the engine. So yes, there you go. There's your potentially useful, otherwise useless fact for the day.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tamsin. And Tamsin, thank you so much for taking the time. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you very, very much. And we've been speaking to Tamsin Webster about a fantastic book, Grab It. I'll have the link to Amazon in the show notes that you can go and buy it straight away. Find your red thread, make your big ideas irresistible. We've just scratched the surface, really, we have. There's so much information in there that you can glean, and go to the website as well and reach out to Tamsin. So thank you so much, Tamsin.
Thank you. Thank you. It's such a pleasure, Lance.
And I hope you, the listener, found this as interesting and useful as I did. If you'd like to contact me, then please do. I had someone on LinkedIn just messaging me yesterday saying they had found my podcast and how they enjoyed it. And so if you're listening to the podcast, then please tell others about it. Otherwise, they won't hear Tamsin, which will be a tragedy. And so just find it, businessbookshelfpodcast.com on Apple, Spotify, wherever. If you want to reach out to me, then my email is lance@ideastorm.co.za, and the website is businessbookshelfpodcast.com. And you can find me on LinkedIn and all sorts of other places as well. So until next time, thank you very much. Goodbye. Stay safe, stay well, and visit Boston one day. Bye-bye. Thank you.